Thank you for the pause.
Someday ones are going to pick up Sipapu, which is a lovely little fantasy. Just as they have picked up Nostradamus' book, and they will say, my God, the prophecies of the time. And that clutches at the hearts of all of you, because you know what's in it. But the fact that it is coming forth tells you more than any words in it, because it is a message for the masses. And for Larry's benefit, I don't know if I have stated this in front of John and Eleanor, but the first thrust, of course, was on the author, which they assumed to be Dorma. It would have been wonderful to stop her. You see, the script went out because she was instructed to write it. Others said they would take it and do what was necessary with it. So it went to the hands of the little crow. And he worked with it a little bit, and he was not able to change it. But he had a motion picture friend, Paul Apodaca of the Navajo, who worked in the motion picture industry and had won an Academy Award for A Broken Rainbow. And Paul said, I would love to take it and turn it into a little 10-page document. And for weeks he worked on it, and he could not change it, not one word of it. And Carl says to him, Paul, pin it up on the wall one page at a time and shorten it. We've got to have it. These ones are going to Utah, to Sundance, to take it to Robert. Well, it didn't get done, and these ones had to go with it as it was. And Carl said, I have a meeting with Paul Apodaca on Monday afternoon. I will go to his house and we will get that done. So these ones went, and we guided them to the Sundance place. That was a nice show too, wasn't it, Oberly? Mm-hmm. We set two of the biggest graphs we have right over Sundance. Hard to miss it.
It's like a beacon.
Well, anyway, after they left there, they went into Salt Lake, and Oberly called to Carl to find out how the meeting went. And the long and the short of that is Carl went to that meeting. Paul Apodaca was terrified. He gathered up all of the papers and put them into a grocery sack and said that at 3 a.m. he was called and told by a man that if he did not get off of that project, he and the Red would be taken out. The Red referred to was his bride of like 3 months. A little red-headed girl. They were not joking. The ancient ones and the brothers of the red man. No. And they recognize it. So far, the white eyes have mostly not recognized it. Greed still shines in their eyes. They don't really recognize it as the Word of God. And that's exactly the way it is intended to be, so that no one stops it. It got beyond any reason to stop the author. At that point, Dorma was speaking for no one. So it didn't matter. Some unknown someone who has now even moved from that residence that shows up in the copyright. For we had to have her copyrighted. But it shows as Daruschka Mert with a Glendale, California address. Great lengths have been gone to protect. When it was no longer feasible, nor worth anything to stop her, then the Dark Brotherhood began to interfere with the delivery of the packages to their rightful receivers, such as Mr. Lucas. His secretary sent it back twice unopened. Mr. Spielberg sent his back unopened. But the producer who produces things like E.T. with Mr. Spielberg got a copy from a friend. So it sits in its proper place. Most have now heard the messages that I take for them. We had a lot of fun with Robert Schuller and the Crystal Cathedral. I told them at the Crystal Cathedral, what did I have to do on the third or fourth morning that I had called and I had gotten no response. And the response I had requested was that one simply get in touch with Carl Bryant in his own neighborhood for validity. And I was irritated by the fourth morning. And I said, what do I have to do? Do I have to put my craft and rattle your windows in that Crystal Cathedral to make you look up and see I'm there? Well, that poor little girl was terrified. I said I wanted that message delivered, and I wanted a response. I expected a response to Carl Bryant. Well, then it got funny. They got a response, all right. The security service called to find out what Indian was trying to blow up the Crystal Cathedral. Carl will moan and groan and tell you about this, but he loved every minute of it. And then I told them, we were sending a package that was to go by hand, Carl Bryant's hands, into theirs, that what they did not realize that other messages had been sent to them and never reached through. And they quarreled, not in our reception area. Yes, in yours. This material will get to Robert Schuller, I said. What he does with it is immaterial to you, and quite frankly, immaterial to me. And we had poor Oberle and Al and Dorma watching television for 2 solid days. Of things I had heard her record while she still had technology in Los Angeles. And I want to tell you now that if that collage of pictures does not sell you, nothing can touch you in the total reality of what is by your own people. And then I made a tape, and I wrote a letter and it was hand-delivered. By not responding, he has kept Burl Ives, Gregory Peck, Roger Williams, Ormond Hammer, all from their committed work. Burl Ives will come in from elsewhere. For there's music in the story that will be used. We will have who we need when the time arrives. And those ones who cast stones should not live in glass houses. For when that crystal cathedral comes down, it will butcher everyone below. And I warned him of it. It would not be through an act of us. Look beyond into that which he proclaimed as truth. And this man has given great gifts to his fellow man. This man, of all the ministers, gave possibility thinking to his fellow man. But he could not think in possibilities himself. He will. Pray it isn't after the fact. For he is now so busy that he hardly has time to attend his own services except for taping or television. And he is a good man. His intent is beautiful. But he has forgotten what he was about. And as I monitor it, I see that he has not witnessed the tapes. They were tossed aside. They would come to his attention one day. Just as the tapes did to Otto. When you have made a commitment and God comes to claim it, you better know it. You better start remembering right fast. Did I maybe agree to do something like he said? You will try to be stopped, but it will be in the most unusual ways. There is no reason at this point for anyone to think of anybody in a little place of Tehachapi, mostly unsuccessful in their business, worked all around, but didn't make much notoriety. Who are they to think they have the answer with great laughter? And so you build it right in front of them. And by the time they decide who it is and that it's real, it's done. And then it's too late. That is your protection. They still don't take us seriously. Most of our lessons have been spiritually based. And the ones on the other end of the surveillance lines, some of them are captivated by their eavesdropping. Most don't care. And to work in that type of service against your fellow man usually attracts ones who are quite daring, and they would never really think that this group would do anything. Another New Age groupie. Getting nowhere. Everything, brothers, in its proper sequence, in its proper time. And I know that you ones have not enjoyed losing your homes or your businesses or reaching retirement, still looking for fulfillment when you should retire and sit and rock. None of you would be able to sit and rock for 5 minutes because you were destined to come to bring this to completion. And it had to be some of you were engineers. And yet it was not time to bring these things forth before. So you had to be held in limbo. And much of the information will be given to you each directly through the pen. Some will be given into the head, but since all of you are more comfortable with the pen, that you can look at the words, sometimes you will be commanded to tear it up, burn it. And it will be cemented into your brain, believe me, to be pulled forth at its proper time. Jake Posed does not even dream of the contribution he will make to man. And yet you see, he keeps on, keeping on. He cannot even be a good enough salesman, stop his inventions to go make himself rich. Because he knows he's not complete. He knows it must be something greater than pumping oil, no matter what the challenge. It is why that particular pump and that particular turbine, it was created as a turbine. But the world really was not ready for that. But in his patents, it is called the Tesla Turbine. And the concept was so irrational that no one would pay attention. So it lay dormant. Now, Jake has brought forth one. There are others. Jake is not singular in bringing forth these. But somehow they never catch on. And yet in operation, it is the most efficient, most versatile mechanical device brought forth. And man doesn't recognize it. And when they do, they try to usurp it for greed, and it will not come to be. And Jake might as well know of it. Given unto the wrong purposes, it will not come to be successful. For it's part of the final gifts to man. And those gifts will not be given to military purposes, even for defense. To make a silent torpedo, yes, it would work. But it will also kill and destroy. It could be the very system that gives the propulsion for the missile that starts your end. So even if it is utilized, it will not be in perfection. That is guaranteed from me to you. Jake has greater gifts to bring to man. I love your music. El Moria plays through the wind on your chimes.
Is there music going on?
Yeah, there's chimes out here.
Oh.
Can you hear them at all?
No, I cannot.
El Moria rides the wind. It is not in a frequency that Larry would be able to hear.
Too high.
Much of the intonations Oberly cannot hear either. Many times when the wind does not blow and Mario comes, he rings the wind chimes if there are any. Always think of blessed Moria. He's a great master. He is truly an elder statesman. And he likes to play the wind chimes to announce himself.
He does it very well too, doesn't he?
Yes.
If it's him doing it now, he's sure doing a good job of it.
Well, we'll quit giving him attention and he will go away. He will not go away. You see, the energies don't have any trouble finding you once. The CIA, maybe yes, but not the energies. Everybody's here. It's your group. It's your guides. All ones have guides. Let me give you a little history of guides and angels. You call them your guardian angels. In the other dimensions, this is the way the soul progresses. An energy would be, I don't like the term assigned, because once again, it is a voluntary situation. And for you ones, it is a great honor for the energies working their way through their lessons and their progression. To have been gifted with the privilege of serving as your guides. For they knew it would come to this. All ones are gifted with at least 12 spiritual and I mean in spirit form. And let's call them angelic beings to guide you, your teachers, the ones who respond when you go within, the ones who watch out in front of the road to warn you. It's man who fails to listen. You have your angels. And before there were guides and teachers to be talked about, Dharma knew she had her angels. And no one argued with Dharma's angels. Regardless of how things went, nobody quarreled with Dharma's angels. Not even the children. You ones were destined to have very special guides. You ones have the masters. You each have your one or two growing energies. Oberle has Andreas. Dharma has Aphis, who just graduated. You each have your little elementals that try to tend your matter. And if you recognize them, you would not have to clean of your house, for they would tend it for you. Man has trouble believing. But you once drew the masters, for the plan shall come to be. So when we gather, there is no other way. We all gather. For the masters are attached to you once. Moria, Uriel, Raphael, Zadkiel, Germain, the list is too long. If you need a security blanket, friends, you know your little blankie to take to your little beddy, you've got it.
Take care of your cold feet.
It is a joy to see as the heart opens and recognizes that there might be a purpose here. And then gradually come into knowledge of how it fits. I go on these little trips with you once and my heart rejoices. As ones look around and know they have come home. And still not pressing, if my job is elsewhere, I would be there. And the Father receives of it. And sometimes He must ask that of it, of you, that you be elsewhere. And then we all rejoice as teachers and guides when the student says, Thy will, Father, wherever I am needed. Just as Larry Jr. would say, whatever the Father wants of me is what I'll do. For all of you, have ones that are touched. Many of them do not yet know. And according to the gifts that they would bring is when they would be touched. And some of your ones will leave you in pain because theirs will not have been of this mission, and they must be allowed to go their way in peace. And that becomes harder to a parent once you have come into the light to experience of that loss. But you will go on. You will turn it into the hands of the Father, and you will go on. Just as you do at the physical death of one you think you cannot be without. You can and you will go on. And Dharma is saying, please, does that mean now I've got to go through another one? No. I speak in generalities.
Nothing personal about Dharma, is there?
Oh, everything is personal with Dharma. She sits here and it embarrasses me that I can't include her. I would hear.
Well, we love Dharma.
Well, she would hear. Shall we all together at the count of three?
Yes.
I would embarrass her.
All hands are up. Who loves Dharma? Rah, rah.
Rah, rah.
Nice.
Rah, rah.
Yes, rah, rah. Sit.
Okay, now we got past that.
Yes, now we can put her back.
Sit in.
Well, there's just not much technicality that I can talk about today. A little premature.
What about, if I may interrupt, what about what E.J. said he wanted me to relate to John about the Thompson engine?
Is this good time?
The times to bring up your ideas. You're clear, you're clean.
All of the things about...
Discuss the things that you wish. I would like to hear.
Okay. John, I had a session with a man who is now deceased over a period of about 10 years. In little bits and pieces. His name was Bill Thompson. And Bill had been an automotive engineer in Detroit in his latter years. And he'd been president of an automotive company, darn it, around the 1920s, and I can't think of the name of it at the moment, unhappily, but it's one of those cars that we used to remember. And he ran that company for about 10 years. And then his family had been farmers up in Wyoming, and he'd been brought up, you might say, by the Union Pacific Railroad people, because they transported a lot of his father's
great
products,
yeah.
And also brought in equipment or et cetera, et cetera. I remember once he told me about how he electrified to some degree the workhouses and the home of the family. One of the first things that had ever of that order that had ever happened in that area. So he had some kind of early shall I say, genius aspects from an engineering point of view. And the Southern Pacific engineers used to let him ride in the engine and so forth, so he got to be quite knowledgeable. And then later on, there was a yard where the engines were, I guess, you know, the old roundhouse, what's that joke? Don't run into the roundhouse, Nellie. They can't corner you there.
Remarkable.
Yeah. We have to have a little.
That's a Navy joke, also.
Yeah, a Navy joke. Anyhow, my point is that he became very knowledgeable in the locomotives of the time. He had books on the locomotives, and the thing he used to love to tell me were the big boys. They were the largest locomotives ever built in the world. And the Union Pacific had them built. I forget how many wheels, driving wheels, but I remember seeing the pictures of them. The Union Pacific had about 10 of them built, and they ran for a number of years. This is all background. He was living in San Diego. And I was doing some initial work in reverse osmosis and read in the paper about this guy and his interesting steam automobile.
Steam automobile?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to tell you about in a minute. And I thought that knowing that steam seems to be a cousin of water, that it might be of advantage to have a small RO system in this car to ensure that the water supply, which he took out of the faucets, knowing that the Colorado River was rife with deposits of various kinds.
Calcium, etc.
That's right. All those hard things. Of course, healthful things, too. That's another side issue. I don't let anybody sell me any sparkless water. I drink that nasty-tasting water that comes out of the faucet because it has many beneficial things in it. In any event, I've diverted. The point simply was that's how I got to meet Bill Thompson. He was retired, lived at his home over in a nice area of San Diego. Marlboro was the name of the street. His wife was the second wife. His first one was deceased. And she was a very nice gal, Elsie, and she had a son by a prior marriage. What did I say his name was when I was telling you this afternoon? Anyhow, I got to know him quite well because he was an attorney and came into the picture laterally from the story I'm about to tell you. I worked with him off and on because he was a lot of fun. And when he was showing me the designs that he had in mind. And what he had in mind was, I think, relatively simple for all of us to understand. And I'll use some gyrations here. Imagine, if you will, a cross-section of a V8 engine. Or let's think of the flat six that was the Corvair. You know, the pistons worked opposite each other on the same crank throw. So when this piston was receding, this one on the opposite side was, or this one was blowing, the other one on the opposite side was exhausting. So they went like that. So he had the idea, because of his steam background, to put steam into one side and have regular automotive combustion on the other. Now then, if you don't know, and automotive engineers generally do not know, this I've all picked up from him, is that steam is a miserable thing to handle after it's exhausted. And it's also, you may think that steam is a great lubricator, but it ain't.
No,
steam is dry,
yes.
And you have to lubricate. This is another thing automotive engineers don't understand, at first, of course. But here, we're talking about the area where the crankcase is, with residual steam leaks, residual combustion leaks, you know, they come by the piston rings.
Yeah.
And that could be, what is it when oil and water don't mix? What's that terminology?
Emulsion.
Emulsion,
yeah.
Which could be frothy and then cause all kinds of problems. So he had a system for putting that all under vacuum so that the steam would not exhaust into there because the pressures would be elsewhere. Wait a minute, that's not sensible.
He must have had a vacuum in there somehow.
Yeah, he wanted to have a vacuum. He put a vacuum pump on the crankcase. And, oh, I know,
He put a crank, he put a vacuum in there so he could pull out those products promptly.
Right, right.
That's what it was. Sorry about that. Rather than try to do it on pressure, because it was coming in through the pressure from the piston area. Everybody with me?
Yes.
Okay. The basic element of the steam generation system was this. Very almost conventional. You have a lot of heat coming out of your radiator because you're trying to cool down the water. There's a proper temperature level. We have to maintain our engines. Although from an engineering viewpoint, if we could use higher temperatures, we could have higher horsepower for the same engine. But we don't have piston material and valves and things that can stand the higher temperatures. That's why we're limited. So he devised this thing thus that there would be, and he did this through his own injector system, combustion of gasoline or diesel, if you wanted it, on the one side, on the one bank. And then the heat that was generated into the cooling water system, because it would have a block that had cooling water flowing through it, excuse me, would be the preliminary water for the steam boiler.
Preheater, that is what you're using for.
What did you say?
Preheater.
Exactly, a preheater. Now, going from the pressures of the radiator to the pressures that existed in the steam boiler, you can see we got a tremendous differential. So he had an arrangement, a valve arrangement, so that would open in periods to allow the water to flow in against that pressure. That's not right. He had a system of injecting that lower pressure radiator water into the higher pressure steam channel.
Had a pump on it or something.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was, a special little pump that he designed. The boiler was a kind of a marvel. It was a series of coils, and again we have here the problem of explosion potential if there's too much water expanded into steam at one time. And so he had that device so that there was only, in a sense, a minute admission of water into the ultimate steam boiler at one time, and then it went on into the steam pressure channels without further chance of explosion. But steam boilers, if not properly handled, have the danger of explosion. And so he had met that, I consider, successfully.
This sounds like a hybrid between an internal combustion engine and this old steam engine they used to have in cars. It's half and half, isn't it?
Yep.
You say there are worse such things?
There was the Stanley steamer.
Stanley steamer, yeah.
Oh, yeah, but it wasn't a combustion combination.
No. That's what he said, combining.
Oh.
It's got a steam engine in there, and you're describing a boiler for
Stanley
steamer.
Oh, yes, dual reciprocation.
Yeah.
But this boiler was on a closed cycle system, and was a special boiler that he had designed to produce almost instantaneous high pressure steam. Now then you've got steam that's being exhausted from the exhaust side, and as you know, that has to be recondensed if you're going to have a closed cycle system.
Right.
The Stanley steamers and there was another name that made a very fine steam engine, a steam car. They exhausted the steam and had to reload with water on occasion, like a horse going to drink it.
They didn't have a condenser on it.
That's what I'm saying, because they couldn't design anything small enough.
Too heavy.
That's right. They couldn't design anything small enough. Well, he had a system where the usage of the steam was so high that when it exhausted, it had relatively little energy left in it, which meant that the condenser system was relatively small. And the condenser system, he had to use, in a sense, a small radiator to be able to bring down that final steam to the radiator temperature. so that he had a closed cycle system. Now, one of the advantages of having steam on one side. Now, this is not a locomotive. The old steam locomotives had dual.